This is a special presentation from the Education Desk at WFYI News, The Takeover, an audio documentary about the promise of school turnaround. The push for school reforms in Indiana came at a unique time in education and political history. In 2011, a Democratic White House embraced reform policies historically held by the GOP. This led to Indiana getting tens of millions of dollars to help boost its lowest performing schools. Did it work? Was it worth it? The state took control of four in Indianapolis. This is the story of two of them.
It's 2015, the first week of school at Arlington Community High School on the northeast side of Indianapolis.
Let me make this perfectly clear so you understand where I'm coming from.
English teacher Kevin Sandorf sets the tone for a ninth grade class.
I came out of a school in 2011 that was a takeover school. It not only hurt my feelings, it put us all in tears because our school was taken away. I assure you, I am never going through that again. Questions now.
Yeah, I got questions. What school that took over are you using?
That was at Howe Community High School in 2011, 2012. Same time this one was. Four of them were taken. Great question.
From WFYI in Indianapolis, I'm Eric Weddle. This is The Takeover, the story of Indiana's radical move to save failing schools. Was it worth it? It's not a simple answer. It's complex and it's messy. This is an investigation of the state's decision to strip away local control and hire private businesses to turn these schools around. And to start, let's go all the way back to the year of school reform in Indiana, 2011. Chapter 1, The Context.
My name is Tony Bennett. I'm superintendent of public instruction. We welcome you to this.
From 2009 through 2012, Bennett and fellow Republican, then Governor Mitch Daniels, made history with their sweeping and highly controversial school reform policies, including expansive school choice and using aggressive school improvement efforts. I recently met Bennett at his southern Indiana home.
Why don't you just maybe just explain where we are, and I'll just start getting my levels set and that sort of thing. So,
like, this whole office is like memories of some of the stuff are things I had in the state house.
Many saw takeover as a radical experiment in the 1990s. Indiana hadn't tried it, but people in the state were looking for options. People like Bennett.
So let's go back, Gary. It's a great question, because I was actually involved with this kind of turnaround work when I was a building principal in Scottsboro.
Years later, after he was elected state schools chief, nearly 100 schools were rated as failing, and there was pressure to do something big, and he did. His administration used a law, one that had never been used, that lets the state hire private companies to run chronically failing public schools. This operator is expected to put in new practices that result in improved student achievement.
Many people forget this. This entire idea is about equity. It's about giving families, children who have no voice and who have been disenfranchised in education, an opportunity to succeed and break the chains of generational poverty. And that was our very idealistic intent.
Three private groups officially took over five academic failing schools in Indiana. The state assigned one company to a school in Gary. Florida-based charter school USA is under contract to turn around three IPS schools in 4 years. They include Imadana Middle School and Howe Emanuel High Schools. Our TV6 reporter...
We're out there at bus duty, and I know Jeff Strange walked up to me. He said, well, it's going to be over. And I said, what's going to be over?
This is teacher Kevin Sandorf at Howe High School describing the day the state approved the takeovers in August 2011.
He said, they're taking the school over. And I said, what are you talking about? And he shoved that phone right in my face. And I went, when did... I was speechless.
I can't overemphasize what a blow this news was for teachers. Math teacher Tina Algren, she envisioned a long career at Howe.
I kind of like to compare it to having a broken heart. It's being dumped, almost. It's been hard to invest as hard in a school as I did at Howe. It's almost like there's a scar there. I mean, as you can tell, I still get emotional about it. I don't think I've ever talked about Howe in the last 7 years without crying about it. It was my home.
Dr. Tony Bennett is the Republican incumbent for Superintendent of Public Instruction, and he joins me live. Welcome. Good to see you.
It is always good to be with you. We missed you at the round table.
Here's Bennett on the late Amos Brown's popular afternoon radio show in Indianapolis. It's a few months since the private companies took over the public schools.
You know I'm on here today as the candidate for state superintendent, and you know, I have a lot of folks around me who wondered, you know, why would we take such a bold action, you know, 100 days before an election and do something the state's never done, which is take over schools.
Bennett went into that election night with most people expecting he would win. But he didn't.
I am Glenda Ritz, and I am Indiana's next superintendent of public instruction.
Glenda Ritz was a grassroots candidate and a librarian who campaigned against school takeover and other Bennett-driven reforms.
This race was a referendum on education for the children of Indiana. The voters have spoken.
Ritz not only beat Bennett, she earned more votes than the state's new GOP governor, Mike Pence. But the reforms she ran against, including school takeover, could not be rolled back. She did push for other school interventions, but it wasn't easy. Ritz was the only statewide elected Democrat. She, Pence, and the Republican-appointed State Board of Education did not work together. And that's a polite way to say it. But those fights are another story. This story is about two of the schools caught in Indiana's first takeover. Was it worth it? I'm focusing on two schools, Arlington and Howe. Arlington first. The company hired to run it broke the contract. We'll go to the classrooms to report on that fallout, but first, a quick pause. Why did it leave? The problem was money. In Indiana, money follows the students, and hundreds left Arlington when the takeover was announced. After 3 years, the company just couldn't afford it. The state ordered Arlington returned to its home district, Indianapolis Public Schools. And this was a really big deal. The community, the alumni, and the district had fought for this day. They felt like they owned the school again. But it's still a school under state intervention. Officials are demanding a higher graduation rate and test scores. And it's not really back, it's restarting. All the staff, the principal, and most of the students are new. Chapter 2, A New Day. It's 3 days before school starts, and staff are still meeting each other.
What we're going to do really quickly.
They're meeting me too, because I'm embedding in Arlington for the 2015-16 school year to report on this restart.
We do a staff picture.
That's Principal Stan Law. They all have high hopes for the first year of Arlington. It's now the second week of school, and everything's in flux.
Okay, here we go. Anybody need a pencil?
English teacher Kevin Sandor's fourth period class is packed.
Pick this up. Thank you again for doing a good job, for coming in. I realize we're sitting, well, there's 40, 41, 42, 43, 44, 45, 46, 47, 48, 49 people. I think we've handled pretty well. I did ask...
Sandorf is not phased. He had handouts ready for even more kids and is already moving them to the library. He's one of the few veteran teachers at Arlington. He knows how to keep the train on the tracks. For example, he keeps a pocket of thumb drives with old lesson plans just in case he needs to change things up.
I'm trying to be as creative as I can given the confines of that room up there, which obviously is a little tight for 50 people. Young lady, would you help me out in passing one of those out to everybody that's in here?
Sandorf puts a good face on it, but he and other teachers are fighting against daily fluctuations of class size, changes to student schedules. A reason for this, the private company that ran the school before left many incomplete student files.
Wow. I've spent about almost a week and a half doing this right here.
It's now Saturday at the school, and guidance counselors, including Shelley Parrish, are sifting through stacks of student files. They're looking for evidence of credits earned but not entered into an online system.
It's multiple kids who didn't have transcripts in, and all their credits were sitting in their CUME folder. And Ed Power just did not transfer that information onto their transcripts, which made it very difficult for me to schedule them correctly.
Because of this, some students were stuck in classes they'd already taken for weeks. Another problem is the student behavior. While Principal Law aims to give them a college prep style education, he's having a hard time keeping students in class.
Oh, wow. Look at this. I saw it. It's graffiti. You all did it.
Law is a Navy veteran and a 20-year educator. He's bald and on the shorter side. And today he's wearing his signature bow tie and carrying a bullhorn. He joins school police officers and other staff as they fan out across the corridors to catch dozens of kids skipping class.
I'm not even gonna lie to you. I was walking her to math. I'm not even gonna lie to you.
You were walking her to art. Is that what your schedule says to do?
You work here? What do you work for?
WFYI.
Huh?
WFYI.
What do you do?
WFYI. What do you do?
I'm a reporter.
You reporting our school? We bad, huh?
Well, you guys just need to go to class, I think.
Hey, look, okay. If you was a student, these hallways are alone.
I know.
Look at this.
Who's here? H Hall, first correction, C Hall.
And he just
floor.
Let her go. Miss, she late too. He let her go.
You don't see this? She late.
She late too.
She late.
One day, a group of football players nearly collide into Principal Law.
Yeah, because I don't care what your excuses are, dude. Everybody has one. Who gives a jack? That's your problem. You all rely all your life, you just make excuses. And then you expect for us to just, okay.
Some of us had classes.
I'm talking just
a little bit. I don't care where you had a class. I bet you won't be late for your freaking football game, will you?
I need to play football.
Just stop talking.
Well, get off, take your jersey off then. And you're done.
The student players are stunned as Justin pulls off his jersey and throws it down.
Your attitude jacked up. You ain't worth playing football on the team.
You ain't worth running.
I know. Guess I'm going to run you out of here, too. Anybody else?
Up till now, Principal Law had been leaning on student athletes to set an example of leadership, many he'd known from past years. But the ongoing daily, even hourly problems are eating at the staff. Students aren't just skipping class. They're vandalizing the building. They're smoking pot. And they're just ignoring the rules and their education. By the end of this day, Law's cooled.
Can you please get him?
I respect
He's joking with a student in his office when Justin, the now former football player, stops by. Law tells him, I need you to start thinking ahead.
I need you to start thinking ahead.
Yeah, it's just my mouth talking before my head.
But the biggest, listen to me, I told somebody the other day, hasn't been a war in this world that did not start with somebody's tongue first.
That's true.
You can't control and bridle that tongue, you're going to find yourself in a world of predicaments. First time, it'll be shame on you. Second time, it'll be shame on me.
And Mr. Law, I have no shame.
Justin is back on the team. There's little trust between the students and staff at Arlington. They just don't know each other yet. The building is beautiful, but there's so much in it not working, like those messy student files. And something big is hanging over Principal Law's head. State officials expect Arlington to post a 60% graduation rate, the highest in years. This year was supposed to be a rebirth, but so far, it's a continuation of the challenges that caused the takeover in the first place. In the first few months, it becomes clear special education needs are 3 times the state average. Many 7th graders are reading like 9-year-olds, and dozens of students are caught up in the juvenile and even the adult court systems. There's not enough staff to deal with this, and half the educators here are first-year teachers. Chapter 3, A First-Year Teacher. By November, I'd embedded in Arlington for 3 months, and it was evident Principal Law was caught in a vicious staffing cycle. He still needs a math teacher, a biology teacher just quit, and there's not enough time to support the staff that is showing up, and a lot of them feel like they're at war with the students. Principal Law's attitude became, if these are all the resources we have, they have to be enough. This is Law at a staff meeting telling teachers to get over it.
Nobody in this room collectively stays up thinking how the hell can we make Arlington a better place. They're not. I cannot do it without you.
But teachers leave anyway. I asked Law about this late in the semester, and here's what he told me.
In the end, like I say, I want the right people on the bus. If you feel you're not that person, it's okay. No hard feelings. I wish you well. Because in the end, you have to service kids somewhere else. And those kids pretty much are urban kids. And those kids look like me. So do them well. And that's my take on it.
It's a few days before the first semester ends. And I sit down with chemistry teacher Lauren Martin. She's one in a transition to teaching group at Arlington. And some want to leave the school.
I knew that this is what I was going to be in. I knew that the kids were going to come from hard places. I knew that it wasn't going to be easy. I knew that I wasn't a teacher, and I'm going to be a teacher and have to be a role model for all these people. And I get that. I didn't think it was going to be this hard. Mr. Law talked about it as like an analogy. Like it's like 10 forest fires, and you only have one fire truck. And that's really like how everything is. You can only handle so much, and there's only so many people. I feel like I'm a lot more connected with my high school students. There are times when they'll come to me or they'll say, can I just eat lunch with you today instead of dealing with someone? And it may not seem like anything that's happening, but something is. Some little sort of impact. Sorry. ITF collectively thought that it would be better if all of us left Arlington. So they contacted other schools and allowed us to start interviewing and go through different processes. Oh, like, I haven't told my kids yet until tomorrow, or well, Thursday. I love them a lot, so it's going to be hard. Especially just knowing about how a lot of situations like this end up. Like the math teacher position. They've had a substitute this entire semester, so I hate that for them. And I hate that I'm causing that as well.
Teachers that remain continue to build relationships and focus students on academics. But some of these students have complicated, even dangerous lives. Chapter 4, Jalen. As I walk into Arlington on February 4th, something feels wrong. It's too quiet. There are students and staff huddled in the entryway and throughout one of the main hallways. There's more police than normal. I walk up the second floor, and in the hallway, Principal Law is slumped in a chair.
Hey, Eric, how's it going? Well, today's one of those days. One of them days you just never want to have to deal with, but you know it's inevitable in some way. I got the call last night at around, I was ordering my food at Morton's. I got a call from one of our staff members here. Hysterical. I can't believe Jalen is dead. What do you mean Jalen's dead? He got killed. Told me that, you know, found him in a car, humped over a steering wheel with gunshot wounds.
They said he just bought that car last week.
He did. He just bought the car last week. He was adamant about getting him a car. Just got a job at Texas Roadhouse. I'm sure he just got his first paycheck. So I had them box my food up and call all the people. They end up, we all went over to Dad's house. Just got to be with the families. My food is still downstairs. That pork chop, that big old pork chop with the mashed potatoes, is still downstairs waiting to get heated up. I just don't have the appetite. Yeah.
16-year-old Jalen Murray had shoulder-length dreadlocks with dyed tips. Everyone seemed to know him for his smile and easy attitude. He had good grades, was running back on the varsity football team. Like many of his classmates, Jalen's life was complicated and dangerous. He was the father of an infant son. A lot of people have been pushing him to stay on the right track. Keisha Ross is one of them. She's the mother of one of Murray's best friends. As I walk towards them, I barely hear what she says to me.
I'm numb. I'm just numb right now. I'm lost. A loss. This is unreal right now. Still here, calling, sinking.
She turns to her son, and they wrap arms around each other. Throughout the day, students paid tribute to Jalen in social media posts and within Arlington. On one white paper banner, a black ink character of Murray has Dreadhead written next to it. Students and staff are counseling each other, too. You wouldn't have expected that a few months ago. Alyssa, a student who's growing close with some of the teachers, says Arlington is becoming a family.
It is good to be here because he was here. Like, yeah. This is his family. Like his son. Yeah, it's very important for everybody to be here today.
He was funny. He was real.
Man, I'm talking about he was stingy, though, because he didn't share none of his snacks. He didn't share none of his snacks. He probably shared, like, two or three.
When he wanted to.
As I leave school that day, I pass Murray's football coach, Steve Mormon. He's a big guy, former NFL player, and he looks devastated.
What are you feeling right now?
Just a lot of emotions, just sad, you know what I mean, that a young man, you know, had to leave this earth, you know, just sad. I mean, as a position coach, I've had kids who, you know, passed away, but as a head coach, just feel like you just didn't do enough. That's kind of how I really felt all last, couldn't sleep last night thinking we didn't do enough, or the kid would still be here. Maybe that might be a wake-up call. So maybe that's God using him for his own glory. And that's just the way I got to look at it. I mean, seriously, that's what's going to help me just keep in that frame of mind. So.
Before the end of the school year, more friends, relatives, and a boyfriend of an Arlington student will all be killed. And as of this recording, Murray's death is unsolved, going on 3 years. Chapter 5, The Finish Line. It's now May, less than 4 weeks of school left, and I'm in Principal Law's conference room with a few of his top staff. Out the window, we see stacks of the completed state test being wheeled out on a cart. You gotta pray for those boxes, Law says.
All right, you gotta pray for them boxes, the little Lord Jesus, help us.
Please, Jesus, help us.
For real.
The focus now turns to graduation. Principal Law and a team huddle at this conference table to strategize. There are 51 seniors. For Law to deliver on the school district's promise to the state, a 60% pass rate, he needs 31 to earn diplomas. Some seniors have credits yet to earn. Almost 100 seniors and juniors haven't passed the required math and English assessment. And some don't even want to retake it. Teaching coach Tina Algren says a student told her, "I ain't taking your test."
That's Corey Allen said, "I ain't taking your test. For him, it's our test. He has no ownership over what happens there." And we have a lot of kids that's how it is. They see it as something that we make them do as opposed to something that they care about and that we're trying to get so they can graduate.
Well, how many times are we running after them? Get out here to do the test.
Kids have had there is not or has not been a real focus with these kids, not only from last year, but hell, from the elementary years on up to now. I mean, for real, these kids come from some dire dangle situations and now they don't see. They only have an example at home to see that education is important. No, it's day-to-day survival, that's all it. Not about building a freaking future. And unfortunately, that's our task to be able to do it. And we got to push through some of the minutia in order to get that done. So, I'm trying to watch my profanity.
A week later, I'm at a come-to-Jesus type testimonial Principal Law is giving the seniors.
Well, all right, you squares. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
He turns the screws. You act up, you're out.
But there are certain things I will sacrifice a few in order to save the masses. If you're not taking advantage of the opportunity seriously, this is your graduation.
After the meeting, I walk out of the small auditorium behind Law and Assistant Principal Deborah Ward. They spot a student, one who's run away and even hides to avoid retaking the graduation test. Law grabs him and pulls him into the projection booth. Ward and I follow.
Why do you go to testing this afternoon?
The four of us are now standing in the projection booth. It's like the size of a large closet. That blowing is the air conditioner.
I've been trying to work with you for the longest. I had Miss Patton call your mother, tell your mother I'm pulling your work permit. As of right now, you're suspended from participating in any after-school events.
Law threatens to take away all of his sports if he doesn't take the test.
Summer for next year until you figure out how to get it together.
All right.
We all leave the booth.
You know what? We've had so many adversities.
What grade is he?
And for the seniors, they need to pass this test now. And some, like Alyssa Helm, they need more credits to graduate. They're using an online credit recovery program called Ingenuity. That means they're being tested on a computer over and over and over until they get it right. Alyssa says her eyes hurt.
Yeah, I do that. I mean, I do it at home during the day. I didn't go to no classes. I sat in front of the Ingenuity computer for them 2 days. I mean, I was getting the work done, but it's just so tiring. And then the day is just so long where you're just sitting in a space and just staring at a computer.
Alyssa was at Arlington during the takeover. She didn't like it. And I asked her if she was glad she came back.
At the beginning of the school year, I would have said no. But now, yes, I'm happy that I decided to stay here.
I heard Alyssa's name a lot during my time in Arlington, in the hallways, during staff meetings. Usually, it was someone talking about what she needed to do. Aisha Billups, the school's English coach, was usually the one responding. She first met Alyssa when the 17-year-old was about to drop out or be kicked out of school.
It was something about Alyssa, and I just wanted her. I could see she was just rough around the edges. You know, as you hear people talk and things like that, sometimes people count out, not just kids, but people in general. And she was counted out. And those are the type of children, I like to help those who are counted out, because you shouldn't count out any child.
The other night, Alyssa completed her final credits, and she can walk. It's now a few hours before commencement. Alyssa smiles and agrees as Billups tells me this story.
I think she was counted out just because of her, not even her parents, it's what she would give people. She was just so, the only word that I use, and I still use it with her now, she is aggressive, you know? Yes. She's aggressive. So I always have to tell her, Alyssa, stop being so aggressive. Alyssa?
So do you think you'd be here, I guess, right now, graduating today?
No.
Scholarship without?
No. No. No, no, no. Because I was going, do you remember I was going to drop out? I was getting ready to drop out. Like after, at the beginning of the school year, I had got jumped. I was going to drop out. I was done.
I think that was another breaking point for us when she had that moment. It was all bad, yeah. And she was fighting and she got jumped. And I was just like, this cannot be your path. You know, and I have to thank Mr. Law too, because even though she doesn't think so, Mr. Law never counted her out either. He never did. But he shows very tough love. And yes, he did almost kick her out of the school, and I did have to save her. I had to beg him to keep her here, but he definitely saw the potential in her as well, but he had to come from a different angle. So without him allowing me, you know, to make sure she stayed here so I can help her, you know. So we have to thank him, too.
On June 8th, 74% of the 2016 Arlington class graduated. It nearly doubled from the previous year.
Tonight is truly a miracle on Arlington Avenue, because there were so many doubters that didn't believe that many of you would be here tonight. But you prove everyone wrong.
But despite the success, Principal Law and the staff ran out of time. The problem, money and enrollment. Like the private company that started Arlington's turnaround with state takeover, the district didn't have enough money.
Erica, it is the most vocal protest that we've seen so far. As you can see, three alumni from Arlington are here. The other 50 or so have gone inside the church because the meeting is right now underway. This is all about IPS's plans to close three of its seven high schools to save about $4 million a year. It was a task force that recommended that.
After that comeback year, Arlington closed 2 years later. Principal Law and some of his staff transferred across town to remake another high school. Arlington is now a middle school with a new principal and staff. The second half of the story, a private company from Florida, Charter Schools USA, was hired to turn around T.C. Howe High School, Manuel High School, and Emma Donnan Middle School. I'm going to focus on Howe. 7 years into its takeover, while it had many of the same challenges Arlington had, it's had more time. It's on the Near East Side of the city, 6 miles south of Arlington. This next chapter is about a Howe student named Michael. Chapter 6, Michael.
So the only thing I would ask is that if you do, just talk into the microphone.
Okay.
Not lean into it, but like where you are right now. Mm-hmm. Which is good.
My name is Michael Hendon. I graduated 2014 of Howe High School. I was 15 at the time when I was a junior and the takeover happened.
I met Michael after he contacted me 3 years after he graduated. He'd been a student at Howe before and after the state hired a private company to improve it. And Michael wanted me to read his firsthand 88-page account of life at the school.
I would write down a list of questions, like on line paper. I would like rip a piece of paper out.
He emailed me a Word doc filled with interviews of students and teachers.
On 10 different sheets, and I would pass them out, literally, in a class that we wouldn't be doing anything in. And I'm like, hey, guys, look, I'm trying to do something. I'm trying to, you know, make something happen. Just give me your honest opinion on whatever.
Two things were clear to me as I read it. First, He loved Howell High School.
It was just so bright, just pulling up into, you know, the street, Julia Avenue. I liked it. I loved it, actually.
The second thing I learned was Michael hated the school after the takeover. The most painful part of it was the loss of the teachers he had grown to love. They were gone. The company replaced them. And some new teachers, they didn't stay long.
And we were taught calculus by 4 different teachers. And in the middle of that, you know, there was no teacher at all. So we just basically kind of like wandered the hallways or didn't have to come to class because it was the first period of class. I don't remember, you know, having homework after the transition, now that I think about it. It was pretty much all in-class assignments, all in-class, most likely open book.
Michael says they felt tricked by the company running HAL, Charter Schools USA. He says they are promised a new curriculum on par with top schools, but they didn't see it. For example, he says there were no AP classes that first year.
These promises weren't going to be kept at all. And I think it was probably like a ploy to get students maybe to stay or to come back.
He graduated. Michael was the valedictorian, and he went to Purdue University. But he says he wasn't prepared when he got there, and he struggled with assignments. I asked him if anything in those last 2 years at Howe was positive.
I'm trying to think, you know, I don't just like speak so negatively about the situation. I'm trying to think maybe a promise that they did keep, but I can't really think of one at the moment, really.
And when you got to Purdue and you kind of realized this, I mean, what did you have to do then? Were you, you had to seek help? I mean, I know your friend is kind of helping you, but what did you do?
I immediately had to go to the office hours for some of my professors. Like, I would be in my professor's like office every day. I would email my professors like, hey, you know, I'm not getting number 2, you know, could you walk me through it?
In his account of the takeover, Michael writes that he wasn't taught any methods or tools to help sustain a passing grade in a Purdue University course. There's data that backs up what Michael says. Indiana tracks how prepared high school grads are for state colleges. So I looked up Howe's data. Less than half of Michael's 2014 class went to college. And of those, more than half needed some type of remediation at college. The average first-year GPA, 1.9 out of 4. And as you wrote this, I mean, was it therapeutic for you? I mean, did this
help
you?
Most definitely, because I was angry. I was so angry, especially my senior year. Like, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, do you think back to this time? Like,
yeah,
I guess
all the time.
The before and after?
Yes.
Why so?
Because I just had a dream, not even like 2 days ago, really, about my high school, actually. There's like so many things I wish I can go back and just relive the moments before the takeover.
Chapter 7, The Deadline. After Michael graduated, Howell High School remained an F. I didn't embed there, but from what I heard, it had many of the same problems Arlington had. Low test scores, low graduation rates, that feeling of chaos. At the same time, the state was getting impatient. Why aren't these schools turned around? After some debate, it gave the company running Howe, Charter Schools USA, a deadline. 1.5 years. And this is the person in charge of meeting it on his first day of school, Principal Lloyd Knight.
My name is Mr. Knight, and I'm going to be your principal this year.
Knight was the 4th principal in 6 years. In this YouTube video, he's introducing himself to the students. The then 35-year-old stands on the stage. Most of the seats are empty, and some people are talking.
The thing I want you to hear, and I want all eyes on me. Young man, eyes on me.
Ernest Tucker is a coach and staff monitor at Howe. He remembers trying to get the students to pay attention to Knight's speech.
So as a staff, we started like, guys, go, 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 get quiet.
And then Knight said this.
As soon as they got quiet, the first thing he said was, I love you.
We love you. And you know what? Hold on. I know it sounds corny. I know it sounds different, but I need you to pay attention.
and being a public school, city school, they looking like love. So everybody bust out laughing. The whole kids, love. What did this guy? He's not going to make it. He saw. Even some of the teachers looked like, love. Why did he? That's the first thing you said when you get this whole school quiet. Is we love you.
Knight already worked for Charter Schools USA. They brought him to Indianapolis to basically turn around the state's longest failing school in a year and a half. And some doubted he could do it.
Morning, Kelly.
That was last year. Tucker said Principal Knight showed them love every day.
Morning, everyone. It's Tuesday. Morning, young man. All right. Good morning.
It's January 2019, and Knight still personally greets the more than 600 students as they walk single file into the school each day. He makes jokes, gives reminders, the occasional tight arm around a student's shoulder to get a whiff of what smoky imprint could be on that jacket.
Morning, Miss Doty. Good morning, Dustin. Morning, Destiny.
We are now just ahead of the State Board of Education vote that will determine if Hal will stay where Charter Schools USA, close, or go back to the district. Did Knight succeed?
Morning, Miss Gags. Morning, Terrence. Morning, Megan.
So I got the beat on it. And as it went past.
Chapter 8, What is Success?
We need to have the time necessary to show you what we can really do.
That's Principal Knight again.
And that's why I always, when I go to community meetings, I invite people to come in, like, walk through our building, see what we're doing, see our students, and then ask yourself, does this feel like a school that needs to no longer be here? And if anyone were to tell me that they still feel that same way, I would 100% respect them, because we are an F school. We own that, but I truly believe that we have amazing things on the horizon, and I also believe that when we get to...
If you took Knight up on his offer to visit Hal,
we have an art teacher.
You'd see that the teacher's lounge doubles as a sort of academic war room.
Giving him one standard to focus on and really learn how to, like...
The entire back wall, painted in large columns of red, yellow, and green, is covered in sticky notes. There's a note for every student that details their current scores.
These kids need this test to graduate. If they don't have it, they're not going to graduate.
This is Assistant Principal Paige Pittman. She's in charge of the academics.
And, like, please be creative in the way that you're teaching it, because I don't want the kids to ever feel like we're teaching to a test, and I honestly don't even like the idea of teaching to a test. So, but we have to look at the data. We have a responsibility to look at that data, because our responsibility is towards getting our students to progress from one grade level to the next and get them to graduation. And you can't do that without looking at it.
Knight also introduced a management app typically used in elementary schools to promote positive behavior. Teachers reward points with a few taps on their smartphones.
Keep it quiet,
so because he did something out of the ordinary, which is...
positive points for things like classroom interaction and helping each other. Negative points for things like disruptive behavior and being out of uniform.
You gotta, if you're not sweating the small stuff in the population of students we serve, it's chaos. It's chaos. And I think, you know, if you're not acknowledging students or giving them that praise, they're going to find a way to get it whether you want it to or not. You know, young man, where are you headed?
And students aren't the only ones held accountable.
Hello, hello, hello. Hello, everyone.
One afternoon in late January, Monitor Ernest Tucker began his daily checks. He visits classrooms to spot issues teachers may have overlooked. And here, he spots a student wearing the wrong type of shirt. Tucker taps his phone to send a report on the teaching assistant to the main office. She objects.
Why should that affect me?
She says the student just arrived in her room from another class. He disagrees.
Oh, you got to be
y'all
joking, Tucker.
Heavy, so he should have already went through y'all, because I'm going to see you.
Tucker doesn't change his mind and leaves for another class.
Sorry. Have a blessed day, guys.
He's still walking away and he's still getting the clearance.
I love you guys.
Principal Knight is quick to point out many of the rules aren't new, but he says having a system of enforcement for students and staff is key.
We came in with some super simplistic stuff. So, like, when I came in, I told kids they couldn't curse anymore. So, for the most part, they stopped, right? I told students that we're going to expect them to learn every day. We're going to supervise you every day. And when they saw those things happen, I think that had an impact. I don't think it was ever like a magic bullet. I think it's more along the lines of, like, are you willing to go to the furthest degree to hold stakeholders accountable for the education of our children in this building?
Expulsions are down, test scores and enrollment is up, graduation rate 92%. That seems like success. Now you may be thinking, why didn't Arlington see this? I wondered that at first, too. But you can't compare the schools. Principal Knight got Hal 5 years into the takeover. Even though keeping teachers is still a problem, Hal already had a core, a dedicated staff, ready to back Knight and fight. Arlington didn't have enough time to grow that. Principal Law started with new staff and problems like incomplete student records. It takes time to restart a school. Chapter 9, Another First-Year Teacher. The staff who've worked at Hal for a few years now talk about an old Hal and a new Hal. Old Hal refers to the 5 years of state takeover before Principal Knight, a tumultuous time with bouts of unstable leadership and continual struggle. Assistant Vice Principal Lacey McKenzie, who also taught in the school, says teachers were being eaten alive by this environment.
In previous years, it was like this daunting task every day of like adults didn't know what was going to happen. Kids didn't know what was going to happen. No one knew what the day was going to look like.
I'm sitting with McKenzie and Principal Knight in a conference room.
And I think that people were coming in and pouring everything they had into like these kids that like they didn't have anything to like pour back into them. And like they would literally get burnt out in like a week.
How many teachers did you see from your time here come and go?
I think that between my first year and my last year in the classroom, so in 3 years, I think that we counted 115 teachers and right. IAs, staff members.
Leave. Yes. So, like, and many of them left in the middle of, like, some left in the middle of the day. Just like goodbye and left.
All right, we are grabbing a book and a paper from the back table, and we are in our assigned seats in 10, 9, we are in our assigned seats in 8, we are in our assigned seats in 7.
English teacher Walla Hassan came to Howe through Teach for America, a transition to teaching program where recent college grads make a 2-year commitment to an urban school. The Georgia native earned a degree in theater, and in high school, she was in all AP classes. Hal's a little different.
And we have, like, kids who came from other schools where they might have gotten, like they went to tougher schools where they got kicked out for less forgiving things. And so when they're here, it's kind of like the idea of, well, you know what? I'm going to hold you accountable. And yeah, maybe today I'm going to ask you to go step out, but then tomorrow we're going to just start all over. And I think that and being here, because so many people leave, has definitely earned respect with the students and has been helped me be able to kind of get their attention. We have so many systems in place that I feel like the way that we run is more like a machine and less kind of like a weird catch-all. And so I would say that the way that things kind of work around here work better than the schools that I went to. And I went to like school in Gwinnett, which is like one of the better counties in Georgia for school. And so I think the old Hal is kind of what we all call it. Everyone refers to as like the Wild West, where it was like you're on your own, you come in and well I know we still have that reputation because every time I say I work at Hal, everyone's like, oh, wow, good luck. Which, I mean, I'm not from here, so I was like, I don't know what that means. But I think I'd be like, yeah, we're fine.
And right now, Principal Knight is trying to convince the community that they are going to be fine. But how do you convince a community to support what they see as a failing school? Chapter 10, Big Reputation.
Thanks to you all for being here. Anybody who doesn't have
a... This is a community meeting about Howe's future. It's in the school's cafeteria, and people form groups at lunch tables, residents, students, and staff from Howe. And each group has a question to answer, including, should Howe become a charter school, close, or return to its home district? I go to a table near the back.
But it's been, you know, it was closed for many years. It was a middle school for a while.
Margaret Banning is a longtime Irvington resident.
It's been on this failing trajectory where most people that live in the immediate area don't send their kids here.
So first off, I understand that 100%.
This is Howe teacher Joe Zweibel.
You know, I taught here my first 2 years when we were struggling. If you look at the data, actually, so like, if you all have the enrollment data, if you notice that...
He's been at Howe for almost 4 years now. He lists the improvements in test scores and higher enrollment. But Banning, the resident, she says enrollment is still far below pre-takeover numbers.
Fourth year.
Enrollment, that's people voting by taking their children elsewhere.
For sure, for sure.
Stephanie Rhodes chimes in next. She's a junior who's been at the school for 5 years, and she likes the new college prep courses.
Also, we have, like, great teachers that, like, encourage us to do the best we can, to, like, be the best of ourselves. And it's, like, it's amazing how we have so much help here.
Banning says she gets it. Howe's better than it used to be, but is it better enough?
I'm not in favor of the way that there's so much reliance on tests, but that is what it is. And there, you have to look at data, you have to look at the set test scores. Anecdotes are nice and they make you feel good about being here, but that's not what's persuading anybody. Great thing.
Chapter 11, Turnaround. CSUSA is the private company that runs Howe and two other Indianapolis takeover schools. John Hage founded the for-profit company in Fort Lauderdale, Florida in the late 1990s, and he ran it with his wife, Sherry. I interviewed them the day the Indianapolis CSUSA Middle School moved off the failure list with its first C grade, and Manuel High School earned its second consecutive C. So I asked, did you do it? Was Manuel High School successfully turned around?
Absolutely. We're not done yet, obviously, but yes, academically, the school has made great strides.
The Hages say they're on the cusp of doing what Indiana hired them to do, turn around three long failing schools, even Howe.
This time next year, you're going to have all schools moving in the right direction off of that failing list. I mean, that's just a big darn deal.
But at what cost? I tell them about Michael, the student who attended Howe before and after the takeover, the period before Lloyd Knight became principal, old Howe. If you remember, Michael blames CSUSA for not preparing him for college. Here's a quote from that interview earlier. He even mentions Sherry by name.
We were asked these things, and she would, you know, smile, and it was very reassuring. And she would say, you know, we're taking care of that. We will make sure this happens by next semester. We will make sure this happens by next year. And eventually we knew these were empty promises.
I told the Hages about Michael's experiences and asked if they should be evaluated on that too.
A lot of trouble in college.
So let me speak to that because, you know, and I don't make any excuses if there was a lack of know-how and turnaround. I don't think anyone in the country had a lot of experience in it. If there was experts doing it, they'd be doing it all over the country successfully. And so we took a big chance.
Hayden says there's a lot of blame. The district fought bitterly with the state and CSUSA about students and records and money. There was a lawsuit.
Did we learn things? Absolutely. Did we make mistakes? Yes. Do we still make mistakes? We do. We didn't go in from the beginning saying we had all the answers, but we did go in with an idea that said we're going to make sure we get to the answers.
Before we close this chapter, we need to talk about money. Like the company that ran Arlington, CSUSA saw a big enrollment dive after the takeover was announced. Years later, it still isn't up to those pre-takeover levels. And remember, money follows the students.
There's never been a profit. There's never been enough money to pay us back what we've put into the schools. At this point, we're several million dollars easily in the schools that we will never recover.
Getting financial documents isn't easy. It took me months to get CSUSA's audits because no one in state government had them. What I found was the company put nearly $5 million into the three schools during the past 6 years, just to keep them operating. Despite the loss, CSUSA wants its new spinoff company, run by Sherry Hage, to manage the schools permanently. Next month, the State Board of Education will choose one of three options for the CSUSA takeover schools. For Howe, the choice is close the school or merge it with another school, ask the company to run it as a charter school, or return the school to the home district IPS. IPS leaders have said if they get back Howe and Manuel, they'll be closed. Chapter 12, What's Next? Indiana isn't the only state to take over schools for academic failure. It's been happening for more than 20 years across the country. But as debate over how to turn around continues, there seems to be less appetite to repeat this aggressive reform in Indiana. Tony Walker is on the State Board of Education. In 2011, he wanted the takeovers to happen. Recently, he said he'd rather the board shut down a failing school than use state law to take it over.
School corporations need to own it. If there's a problem with the education in your district, that is a problem you created and you need to fix it. The whole idea that the state can come in and fix it for a school corporation, I think, is false.
Indiana policy has shifted alongside Walker. Local school districts are now pressured to make their own interventions by hiring outside partners to fix failing schools. Districts now only get a few years of failure, not six, before the state would come in and take action. Tony Bennett, Indiana's former state school chief who oversaw the takeovers, he continues to follow the school's progress. I asked him if he could do it over, would he still push for the takeovers of the five schools?
Well, no, I mean, we would make the same decision to intervene. Would we take different strategic and tactical steps? Yeah, there's no question. I mean, looking back, I still believe that we have an obligation to children and communities to intervene and improve schools. I think that's a moral and legal obligation the state has. Has anyone gotten the process perfect across the country? No. And we have to learn from each other. We have to talk.
The decision for Indiana to again take over a school isn't far off. Next year, more are expected to be eligible. The Takeover was produced by WFYI in Indianapolis. I'm Eric Weddle. This would not have been possible without the openness of Principal Stan Law and Arlington High School staff, who allowed me to embed there for the 2015-16 school year. This story was produced, edited, and mixed by Sarah Neal Estes and myself. Special thanks to Michelle Johnson, who approved a story idea that evolved into this. All music composed by Kenny Siegel. You can hear more by searching at bandcamp.com. And to read more in the Takeover series, go to wfyi.org/thetakeover.